into the minds of the most influential and successful creatives on the planet. From EDM record labels, club owners, EDM event producers, music industry lawyers, managers, EDM recording artists, and key industry leaders. They are all part of the story when the DJ takes the stage. They push more than buttons for everything you need to know about the EDM dance music scene. You need this podcast right now. Welcome to the Mastermind of a DJ podcast, hosted by Naughty Natalia.
Hey, it's Natalia, and I welcome you to episode number 28 of the Mastermind of a DJ podcast, powered by the mecca of EDM adult entertainment nightlife, Vixen's Cabaret in Davie, Florida. Now, I'm about to go into my past, where the late nights turned into mornings very quickly, especially working on air and in the clubs. And with me was a guy named Cato K. Now, Cato and I worked nearly every live broadcast or remote for a radio station called South Florida's Pure Dance Channel, Party 93.1. And before we knew it, 3.5 years had passed, and my time at Party 93.1 was up as the station flipped formats to a rock music station, and my run at Voodoo Lounge, where Cato and I had our broadcast for years, well, that went with it as well. In this case, I felt like my heart was broken and taken away from me in a flash. But for Cato, it was a whole other different beginning. He became one of America's hottest mix show DJ and club DJs, dominating Miami airwaves and shaping the sound of the Magic City dance music scene. Now, Club Sessions with Cato K was heard weekly on Miami's party station, Power 96, as well landed on the radio and satellite frequencies of Y100 and Sirius XM. His mix show became one of the most downloaded podcasts on iTunes consistently, ranking in the top 50 music podcasts with such artists as Tiesto, Armin van Buuren, Avicii, Roger Sanchez, and Ferry Corsten, just to name a few. Now, he ended up signing up with a premier dance label, Ultra Records, where he released 4 compilations with more than 150 albums sold worldwide. And for those that are thinking more about streams, no, CDs were huge back in the day, and to be able to sell a CD compilation was like a big deal. He had Ultra Weekend 3, Ultra 2008, and Ultra 2009, which all reached the top of the Billboard electronic dance album charts. I mean, that's huge. Is this your typical work your way up the ladder success story? No, not really. There was so much more going on behind the scenes that not many people knew about. And the personal battle that he had with himself was in full force. It was a war of life and death. And he had to make a choice not only to save himself, but his family too. He literally pressed pause on the EDM scene and simply walked away. So the interview you're about to hear is exclusive because I get to pick up where I left off from over 15 years ago. I had so many questions for my dear friend Cato, and the personal transformation from career, health, and life. His story is truly inspiring, and I think it's a great kickoff into May, which is Mental Health Month. So here you go. Let's get into the mind of Cato K.
All right, so here's the deal. I don't want you to edit if it's not necessary.
Okay.
I just want to start. Like, let's just start this thing. Like, hit the record button, and then we'll just go.
Okay.
You hit record?
I hit record. We're recording.
Right. Okay.
Legit.
Welcome to the Washed Up DJ podcast with Naughty Natalia. People were being like, who's Cato K? Why is Naughty talking to this guy?
Why do you think?
Oh, girl. Because we go back.
We go back.
I text you. Well, like a couple months ago, and I was like, you know, it's been 20 years since our first broadcast, like our first live broadcast was 20 years ago, which is pretty insane. Like, makes my head hurt.
Yeah, it's true.
So
thinking about it, what we've experienced together, Cato, and the importance that you play on the
No, track. Hold on. No,
what?
No.
What?
This is some, so just so you know, listen, just so you
emotional.
Listen,
what?
Just so you know, I've listened to every show so far, and you come on, you gas up every DJ. You're like, oh my God, I'm DJing the biggest DJ. I'm like, is all of her guests the number one DJ in the world? Because that's the way, and that's a compliment to you. You make every guest feel like they're the number one DJ in the world. Right now, I am de facto retired, and I only had a very, very, very small little contribution to dance music. I will admit that I did have some contribution, but very minimal. So don't gas me up.
Okay.
And if anything, I should be gassing you up because, or I think in hockey, they call it like, you know, pumping your tires because, you know, 20 years ago, the one thing I'll say about you when we did do live broadcasts is you had this like fascination about, you know, the craft of DJing. I could sense that. Like you were engaged. You would each DJ you worked with, you really understood that DJ was unique and authentic to their craft. And you know, we would get playlists for a live broadcast and we'd have to play like 17, 18 songs. But each DJ would, you know, would have the same list of songs, but present it in a different way. And you were always fascinated by that. Mm-hmm. To see you now, you know, 20 years later with this show, even more passionate about it. And really like some of the conversations you have with your guests, I'm just like, how did she get that out of this guy?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm either friends with or know all your guests.
Yeah.
You know, there's maybe a couple that I haven't met, but the rest of them, you know, I know these guys and you really have done an amazing job of like getting so much out of your guests. So if anybody should be gassed up, it's you. I love the show. 20 years later, this podcast, because it's not radio and you make the rules is, has been a lot of fun for you to listen to you evolving and the guests you have on and what you get out of everybody has been amazing. So
I really appreciate that.
You go, girl.
Yeah, thank you so much. So Cato, Party 93.1, and you know, obviously I'm going to talk about this in my intro, but Party 93.1 came at a time when dance music was still finding its sense of identification. It was a test radio station, really. And I came from working at Groove Radio 103.1 in Los Angeles. So I already had even more history and obviously my involvement back into radio in South Florida. You know, I didn't even think there was going to be another dance radio station after Groove. And when I heard Party 93.1, and granted, I was working nighttime at various clubs, bartending, all the shit that I was doing. And then during the day working in corporate America with, I think it was like Robert Half International or whatever, just to keep my foot in the door with working and keeping my hand in the hospitality industry. Long story short, when Party 93.1 came to be, it was the DJ at Scarlett's, Andy, who's now the DJ at Vixen's. And he's like, yo, Natalia, this radio station, Party 93.1, is coming up right now. You have got to they have no DJs on. And I know you used to DJ. And I'm like, what are you talking about, man? What's that? But it took me 6 months. I didn't know anybody at the radio station. I had, and I'm like legit textbook. Like I had my air check tapes. I had my resume. I had a cover letter designated to whoever in programming just to hear my air check. And I'm like, I am the one who needs to be on this radio station. I know dance music. And that's when I was involved with Ultra, doing my Ultra stuff that I was doing. So I was like, I had to be here. And every person that came on board after me had that same philosophy. And I did my first broadcast with Raul Rock the House at Voodoo Lounge in downtown Fort Lauderdale. And then things changed and Cato K comes in. And holy shit. I remember when your very first broadcast And Cato, you were so nervous. you were like, damn, I want to make sure. Because obviously, and that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize, that in radio, when you're mixing in radio, there's so many more restrictions and rules that you have to follow. And in this case, you come on board, not only understanding what the restrictions are, but you're coming in with, hold on, I'm going to hold this shit down. And we had one... I swear to God, you were one of the best DJs for me to work with. We understood each other's fabric. You knew when I, you know, you knew how to work me. You know what I mean? And we had this relationship on the air that not many DJs had in other live broadcasts. We owned it. And Cato, you came with, you were thrown in the fire and you proved yourself so much. You put your heart and soul into Party 93.1. And that's important to know.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah. I mean, look, in life, you know, and it's like with your podcast, you know, I feel like there's three people here, right? It's you, me, and someone who's listening right now.
Yeah.
What's up?
What's up?
What's up? What are you running right now, bro? Oh, cool. So I think it's important to add value in these conversations, right? Mm-hmm. So I think what I'm gonna hit on here is for anyone who, you know, if you're listening and you want a DJ and you've been checking out these podcasts, either because you're interested in the DJs and to hear their story about how they got to where they are, but just in life in general, when a door opens, first of all, you need to kick in the door. But when that bitch opens, you need to make the most out of the opportunities. And the reality is I probably skill-wise, the reason why I was so freaked out a lot of times on the live broadcast is because, you know, everyone's tuned in. It's live. Like, the technology that exists now wasn't back then. You really need to know how to mix.
Right.
And when you're trying to mix 17 songs that the, you know, BPMs from 115 to 140 and make it work, I mean, it's challenging. So I just knew the opportunity that Buster gave me, shout out Buster, to start basically as an intern and start with the street team. You know, that opportunity to what it ultimately lead to is incredible. So that, I mean, Party 93.1 was the foot in the door.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember when Phil, the program director, like told me that, you know, he was going to put me on a live broadcast. You know, that I knew that was an amazing opportunity. So wow. Yeah, that was definitely the beginning of something special. And then what would develop at Voodoo, I think also was really cool. And I think I ended up, I was there, you know, long after Party.
Yeah.
I was there for like 6-7 years every Wednesday night. And I mean, that was a little bit of see, the thing is, so here's the thing.
I know we have to catch up on this.
So here's the thing. I believe in being authentic.
Yeah.
So the thing with dance music is, you know, you have to, and I've changed, the older I've gotten, the more maybe I've changed. But at the time, I just believe like I had to submerge myself in kind of like what was happening in Miami. Yeah. And it led me down this path of going to space, hang, you know, on the terrace after hours, Ivano Bellini. Mm-hmm. And I was basically living the life.
Yeah.
And trying to bring that back to radio, which was tough because obviously, like we just said, like you have playlists and you have a certain format that you have to play. But being authentic ultimately, I think, is what helped me cut through and relate to who was coming to the club, because they're like, oh, damn, this is not radio. This is Miami. This is the sound that I'm hearing in the club.
Yeah.
And I got in a lot of trouble a lot of times, maybe playing, you know, songs I shouldn't, or more edgy remixes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But ultimately, you know, getting opportunity with Party 93.1, the Voodoo broadcast, that was the foot in the door. And that was like taking advantage of an amazing opportunity. Like you're saying, to have a pure dance station in Miami, which I consider to be the mecca for dance music, at least in the United States.
Right.
It's the capital.
Yeah.
That's special. Like, even coming back, like I'm in town this weekend and it like I get kind of choked up. It's emotional, the fact that I did have this small little piece in this city says a lot, because there's a lot of people who are fascinated by DJing. They want to become DJs. They want to become producers. They want to get into this industry. That's why I love your podcast so much, because you hear all these different stories about how these DJs came to be. Mm. So it's special when you do have an opportunity to turn it into a career path. It's special, but it's all about getting that foot in the door and being authentic.
Yes.
Are two keys.
Yes. Oh, that's very, very good tie in. I like that. And you live that. I saw that firsthand. Super important. And what the opportunity is now compared to the opportunity back then, two different experiences. You know, you have today's DJ who is making his mixes in the bedroom, now on his laptop, super easy, doesn't have to fumble with CDs and or if not with the vinyls, right? Creating the playlist or whatever has access to music much more easier than having to, you know, be a DJ to go to a record store and wait for a certain track to come out so you can go buy it. You wouldn't know if it would work on the dance floor. There were challenges back then, and I feel that the challenges are they're not as hard now, but finding the opportunity is much more competitive. I guess follow me on this, but like back then you had to play, you had to prove yourself, and now you're proving yourself on social media as a general statement with a lot of the DJs of today coming in. How do people find that opportunity now, Cato, in your eyes?
I'll disagree with you in the sense that mm-hmm. it's not easier today. I actually think it's harder.
Really?
Yeah. Because so for instance, I got an opportunity to play in the dance music capital of United States through hard work, being on a street team, mm-hmm. being a board op.
Yeah.
And then when I had an opportunity to show what I could do, there's a million other better DJs in this city, but they weren't ready to go to the corner of Cayocho and distribute t-shirts from 5 to 7.
Yeah.
That's how I got my chance. So it was less about talent. Nowadays, if you want to get into this, mm-hmm. everything you need mm-hmm. is available. The tools, mm-hmm. the software, the platforms to build a brand and build your name. The problem is now you truly need to have the talent because you're competing with 1,000 other people who are trying to do the same thing. So yes, mm-hmm. the grind and outworking people, but you need to be talented. I feel like, you know, one of the things that gave me longevity in this city, like I said, was being authentic because I lived the life. I went out to the club. I mean, to my detriment, I mean, it almost killed me, you know, but I had my finger on what was happening in the club because this is club music. So I feel like a lot of artists back in the day felt like this was kind of a backdoor way to become a pop star.
Yeah.
And that was, it was never going to happen. Like all the biggest records were imports,
right.
were coming from, you know, whether it's from Holland or Germany or UK, those were the people who were making the sound that was being played in the clubs, not American artists, but on American radio, you're hearing all these American artists. Yeah. And that's the problem with Party 931 is I don't think it was authentic to, and when I started club sessions on Y100, I got in a lot of trouble because,
what?
Oh Why? My God, because I was like,
why were you getting in trouble?
Because so club sessions started on Y100 because Voodoo Lounge, when Party 93 went under,
right.
paid Y100. And they say, we want to do this. And they're like, all right, we'll give it a chance. And they're like, we want Cato mm-hmm. to come play. And so Michael Yo, who was, I think he was like the drive time or evening.
Yeah.
He was the host. He saw it firsthand. He's like, Jesus, this place is crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm playing like David Guetta, Bob Sinclair.
Yeah.
Not American artists.
Right.
French, like two French artists right there.
Yeah.
So I'm playing imports. He could see what was happening. He hit me up and he's like, hey, we would like you to do Friday night an hour dance music show called, you know, I hadn't come up with Club Sessions yet.
Yeah.
And I said, cool. I said, well, how about 2 to 4? Because, you know, what, 1 hour doesn't make sense. He's like, okay, cool. But he's like, do me a favor. Do not play any instrumental tracks and play our, like play a good balance of our music. So at the time, like Madonna and Justin, what's his name? Timberlake.
Yeah, Timberlake.
So those artists were trending in the pop world. So I had some, you know, more underground remixes of these artists, but I just couldn't. I'm like, this is cheesy. Like nobody wants to hear this. People hear that on the stations. 2 o'clock in the morning in Miami. So I pretty much would drop the first song. If he tuned in, be like, oh, cool, Madonna, and hoping he would stop listening. So second song, I start going in and I'm playing like Sebastian Ingrosso now, Axwell.
Yep.
And yep. All instrumental, you know, I don't want to say all instrumental, but yeah. A lot of instrumental tracks. And all of a sudden he starts to, he's like, bro, what is this? I told you only. And we had a meeting and I told him straight up. I said, look, the show's not going to work. If I have to play, I say, I can sandwich an instrumental between 2 vocals. I will do a better job of trying to find some of the top 40 tracks remixed, but those only will need to happen in the first half hour of the show. You just need to trust me. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. And if we do this right, we can actually monetize this and more broadcasts will come.
Yeah.
And eventually he threw his hands up and he was like, do your thing. Cause now we're bringing in money to the station. Cause Voodoo, I think we had another night with Voodoo and then we had another night. Like I remember I had broadcasts, I think at one point, like 6 nights out of the week.
Yeah.
And so that was the key, was to get revenue to the station, but then have somebody like, just say, just do you, man. It's after midnight. Go for it.
Yeah.
And that's what was different than what was happening at Party 931.
Oh,
was
my
that.
God.
And that's just corporate. You know what I mean? Like I get it. You know, there's people at the top who are not living this ethos, who are threatened by the sound.
Yeah.
But you know, if you live down here and you're going, you are at space. Like, so you had actually at Party, I know we had a broadcast from there, but it wasn't live. It was like a mix and you were just doing like call-ins or check-ins, but everybody knew at space, you know, Oscar G's in the main room, Ivano's, is going to be on until God knows when, on the terrace. That was what was,
working.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the, you know, this music needs to connect with you. It needs to create emotional connection if you do it right. And that's where that art and craft, that's not going to happen from Madonna and Justin Timberlake in this world. Not to say that those, you know, that pop music in general connects with the masses. But what makes this special is when you go down this path, it the sounds, and I mean, look, there's a, you know, like we need to be honest. I mean, there's in reality, there's substances that enhance,
of course,
these experiences, but that's what it is. I mean, that ultimately it's about escaping reality on the weekend. And, you know, the problem with Miami is, I mean, it can be a 24/7 lifestyle and it can be very dark, and I'm not part of, you know, like I said, to kick off the show, mastermind of a washed up DJ podcast, because I'm not in this lifestyle anymore, and it was very destructive to me. But at the end of the day, this music, it creates an emotional experience. It takes you on a journey. The DJs that know how to do it right, you know, these people that are in this culture, they want to hear new music. They want to be, every time they go out, they want to be, they want to hear something new and fresh, and that's what makes it interesting, is the fact that every set can be built, you know, as DJs come in, you hear new sounds and new energy and new ways to, just take you down this, you know, down this path. And I know, I mean, you're on the Groove Cruise. And so I'm sure you heard a couple sets that were like, oh, damn, what's this?
Yeah. There was the thing right now is future rave and euphoric trance or euphoric techno, right? So we can, you know, to me, I look at trance music as trance. Here's techno. Here's hard house. Here's house, right? Here's disco. You know, I like to keep it very simplified. And then, of course, you know, and as we were talking about how DJs can make it within this industry compared to before, I understand your point now. I totally get it. Yes, you do have to have more talent now, and you have to the rush to have to reinvent yourself on a constant is huge. So the pressure is on. I get it, because you can have a great song, you know, and I had the chance, you know, obviously after a party, I went to the rock station, and then that evolved to Power 96. And then, you know, dance music, I felt, has taken a minute to catch on, but now it's here. Now you're hearing it on pop radio stations. Now you're hearing a lot of those mixes come in. Do you feel dance music is now overrated, over commercialized now?
Well, so now, I mean, I live in Houston and I don't work in, to me, Bad Bunny has, like, in my world, which is there's a great example there, mm-hmm, with what, you know, Bad Bunny is he's playing in, you know, where I work, yeah, which is a baseball stadium. He's playing over here at Marlins Park. They had to add an extra show. This is a guy, the first time I heard him, you know, he was like considered like a Latin trap, like hip, you know, hip hop, the Latin equivalent of a trap artist in hip hop. Mm. And he's never done a song in English, at least not that I know of. So he stayed authentic to himself. Mm-hmm. And that connected now, not just with Latin fans, but globally. Mm-hmm. And he's been featured with, you know, on some of the biggest records over the last few years to, you know, help build his brand.
Right.
But I think the same thing for dance music. Like, I personally am not exposed to it too much in Houston. We have like two clubs that bring in, one is specifically, mm-hmm, more underground house DJs. Mm-hmm. And then another one is kind of your bigger, like, you know, EDM type names. Mm-hmm. So in Houston, I really am not, you know, I think dance music is still more in a niche area in Houston. Mm-hmm. Now here in Miami, you know, it could be extremely popular, mm-hmm, you know, the music, but there's a difference. Like here in Miami, you'll have a club that, you know, I don't know, like name a Diplo.
Diplo, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. He'll play at, like, how many, you know, Diplo is a guy who wears a lot of different hats as a producer with his project with Major Lazer, mm-hmm, and he's doing house records. He's doing like country house records.
Yeah.
He's doing pop records. He's producing for pop artists. So he can go a lot of different directions. But if he were to play at, is Story still a thing? Mm-hmm. Whatever club.
Yeah, Story. I think Story. Yeah, Story.
Where?
Live. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
You're going to have a lot of people that are just in town that weekend, get a bottle, and it's irrelevant who's DJing. Where, you know, back in the day at Space, people knew Oscar G. People knew Ivano. Ivano in particular, you know, nowadays we call them, you know, Sunrise Terrace Classics or Ivano, yeah, Classics and Chase the Sun. And, you know, I could go on and on, you know, thinking about all the classic records that Ivano would play. But he had a way of kind of like almost programming like a radio station where he would have some recurrent hits or recurrent records that he knew everybody wanted to hear, but he balanced it out with new tracks every week.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I think the music nowadays, it just, you know, we're so niche, we're so online, we're so community focused. Like the amount of like niche subreddit categories of people on Discord, on Reddit, like, mm-hmm, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, NFTs or crypto or, you know, specific genres of music or Twitch streaming, if you know, what game, Fortnite, you know, I play Fortnite, mm-hmm, I stream Fortnite. Like, it's just like, it's so, we're so narrowed down that I still don't feel like dance music is necessarily like a massive phenomenon.
Ooh, interesting. All. Interesting.
At least not where I'm at. Like here in Miami, you know, like I said before, like I consider Miami a dance mecca. So, I think it's always going to be music that is always prevalent, always thriving. Mm-hmm. But it's a big, you know, it's a big world. Like,
well, let me ask you this. Do you think that put yourself back to when you first started with Party 93.1, and now let's fast forward to today, would you still strive to be Kato K, the DJ?
Yeah, but...
Because you had a way about you. You had a way about you, which is also another great thing that I loved about you, was that you're so direct. You didn't fuck around. You know, you knew what you wanted, and you wanted a DJ, and you know, it was a tug of war relationship with music.
Yeah. So once again, I think this is work ethic. You know, work ethic has led me really down the path of living out two dream jobs, like what I currently do and then what I did for 20 years as a DJ. And I just made things happen. Like I just would kick in doors.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be the Party 93.1 opportunity, whether that be when I started to produce and teaching myself, you know, through whether it be books or online courses at the time on how to learn at the time Logic or Reason, later Ableton. I remember going to Ultra Records and just like busting in. They knew who I was from my radio show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to do a compilation. Like at the time, you know, the biggest compilations in Best Buy or wherever you wanted the music, were the Ultra Dance CDs.
So
Ultra Weekend, Ultra 2000, you know, 6, 7. So I literally just went to New York and I'm like, look, you know, no one in the country is playing as much dance music and has much freedom as I have. Mm-hmm. I really want to be kind of the representative for Ultra in Miami. And that opened the door to, you know, I did 4 compilations on Ultra.
Wow.
I had a record deal with them. Now here's the thing that I've learned with age is in this industry, whoever's listening can earn a living becoming a DJ. Now, but you have to have something that leads other, you know, like you have to have an innate gift. Like we all have purpose in life.
Right.
The trick is to find what your purpose is and bring it out. So a lot of times, you know, it might not make sense. Not everybody can be famous. Not everybody can, you know, make millions of dollars and have millions of followers. Like some people might not have the purpose of music. So you can't force it. But let's say you're somebody and you're in the car and you're like, oh, that's a hit. Mm-hmm. The first time you hear a song and it becomes a smash hit.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, you have a party and you create the playlist on Spotify and people are dancing nonstop. You probably have something for music, right?
Right.
So I believe with hard work, you can turn this into a career path where you start playing at, you know, a bar or a nightclub, make a couple $100, that turns to $500, $600, you know, and you start to snowball. Now the production thing is different. Mm. People are like, oh, you know, Calvin Harris, he's so simplistic. Calvin Harris is one of the 1 percentile of people who have an innate musical gift.
Yeah.
Like he's not manufacturing that. Like he really just knows how to create catchy hooks.
Yeah.
So it's naive for us to think that if I lock myself into the studio, I get Ableton. And if I sit there all day, I can become Calvin Harris. Even Deadmau5, who isn't like a classically trained musician, still has something inside of him, a gift, a purpose that allows him to create the melodies and chords that have turned him into Deadmau5, even though he can't play a chord probably, you know, on a piano or on a MIDI the way, let's say, a trained classical musician can or a pianist can. You know, like a cool documentary to watch is The Beatles, the new one on Disney Plus, like it's 3 hours or actually like 3 episodes, 2 hours each, 6 total hours of uncovered footage of the Beatles actually creating their last album.
Wow.
And when you watch Paul McCartney, you're like, Jesus, this guy he's like got a gift. Mm-hmm. He can play the piano. He can sing. He can play the drums. They're all switching off instruments. That's a gift for music. That is what ultimately is going to rise to the top.
Right.
You can't manufacture that. Can you make a techno record with some percussion, some beats? Mm-hmm. Of course. Yes.
Right.
And can you brand that? Can you build a brand that you wear a mask and a helmet? And you have dope content, dope videos and photos and you know how to put on a show. Yes. Okay, cool. You can, you know, but at the end of the day, the truly talented people in life have that gift. God has touched them. Mm. So it's not to discourage people and say, oh, well, you know, I should give up. No, it just means you're either going to have to work harder than everyone else around you to separate yourself. Mm-hmm. But also, especially now, I mean, you have to like literally, like what you're going through now with your podcast, right? Yeah. Like you have to be the producer. You have to reach out, book the talent. Yeah. You have to be the host. You have to teach yourself the audio component. Like there's so much to this. Mm-hmm. And the same thing applies for DJing. But I feel like there's some misconceptions about true talent. Like I feel like sometimes, you know, God's gift and purpose that he's given to some artist mm-hmm. is just kind of discounted at times. You know?
That's very true. Very good point. All right. Let me ask you this, Cato. 20 years DJing. You've reached, success for sure. But there was other elements at play that were deep and dark. What happened? Because you and I lost contact, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I really don't know why. I've always loved you. So I don't know why.
Well, I mean, so first of all, you know, a lot of personal issues with my family. You know, I lost my mother in 2013, and leading up to that in 2009, she had a serious brain injury. She almost passed away. I had two brothers at the time were 12 and 17.
Right.
So that was pulling at, it seemed like every time at the time, you know, I think at my peak of my career, I had some residencies around the country. I was playing out of Miami. I was really trying to use the my name tied to Miami to get out of Miami,
right.
If that makes any sense.
Like totally does.
I had a podcast. I had a show on, I guess it was just XM satellite radio mm-hmm. on BPM. And eventually they merged with Sirius. So I was trying to like get my name outside of Miami to play, you know, all around the world if I could. But I kept getting pulled back by these personal issues. You know, my mom almost passed away. I have two brothers. And so when I started to go and I was living the life, I was going out and doing a lot of drinking, partying, staying out late, thinking like, oh, this is going to help me in my DJ career. Now, when things go south in your life and you start to escape and you feel good and you don't ever want to come down, that's a problem. So I started just way overdoing it. I remember just, I would wake up like blackout drunk all the time. And I've done some embarrassing things and things I'm not proud of. And I started to even like spin pretty drunk a lot of times. Mm. People didn't know like on the back end what was happening. Eventually my mom passed away and I ended up getting custody of my two brothers and raising them.
Right.
And eventually when I took responsibility for them, I still was, you know, I kind of like my DJ career, I kind of switched more to radio. I became like more of your just traditional radio personality mm-hmm. on Power 96.
Right.
And stopped DJing in the clubs as much, wasn't focusing on production anymore. And I knew that phase was winding down. So eventually I got sober. Like I realized it would be unfair. Our mother died of alcoholism. I've lost my father. He died of lung cancer, both drug addicts and addicts mm-hmm. and alcoholics. Mm-hmm. So I knew it was in me. I knew it was genetically in me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, someone called me out. I went to my first AA meeting and that was it. Like, I mean, I've been sober now and, you know, this March will be 8 years and I've like a whole new life started for me. The moment I decided for my brothers that I couldn't be what their father you know, was what their mother was. So that was the turning point for me. And so once again, to provide value, if you're sticking with us on this conversation and you're hanging out with us is the reality is we don't talk about it, but this is, if not everybody, like I believe in escaping and God bless you. If you can go out to happy hour and have a couple drinks and say, you know, oh, I'm starting to feel a little tipsy and you let off some steam,
mm-hmm.
of course, like you're going to blow. Like if you don't, if in this life, like the Groove Crew is a good example. You have doctors and lawyers on that thing that they save up. They're like, I am, you know, I'm going to bottle this stuff up, you know, in all year.
Yeah.
They get on the Groove Cruise, they let it out. And so you have to have these releases and these escapes. But when you start to drift and not come down, that's when you know you have a problem. So, you know, obviously I knew that, you know, that I had a problem. And thank God, like, you know, I think my mother passing away and inheriting my brother saved my life in a lot of ways.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. Because if I didn't have that responsibility, I don't think I ever would have like been able to get myself together. And I mean, people don't realize like, you know, here in Miami, you go to space, you drive home on I-95 at, you know, 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
You easily. I saw it after a broadcast at Voodoo Lounge. I watched mm-hmm. three guys kill themselves right in front of me, getting on the off ramp mm-hmm. to 95 South. I literally watched a car plow right into a wall. Kid in the back went through the front shield window.
What?
Yeah. And I pulled over and I'm like all messed up.
Yeah.
And I'm pulling them out of the car.
Yeah.
Like I've, you know, so I've seen it. We all know, we all know in this industry, people who back then are not here anymore.
Right.
Probably can count with two hands. I know I can easily.
Yeah, I know I can too.
So this life will destroy you if you let it, if it consumes who you are and it starts to affect, you know, if, you know, the only reason why I'm not like a multimillionaire in the DJ game
mm-hmm.
is I think I have a musical gift.
Yeah.
I was hungover half the time. Like I would wake up to try to produce.
Shit, man.
And I just felt, you know, I had so many broadcasts, so many nights that would bleed into the next day that it really like destroyed my ability to focus on work. And when you see the guys now, like, you know, really good friend, Marcus Schulz, who had, you know, I've had an opportunity to work with in 2020 on a project in this new life that I'm in.
Yeah.
He's a professional. Like he don't mess around.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he rarely drinks.
Yeah.
He's focused, but he gets it. He understands also the emotional connection of his music. That's powerful. That's the key. A lot of the younger people who want to get into this because they either want to be famous or they want to get something from it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
This is not that industry.
Yeah.
DJing is about you orchestrating other people's experiences. And as a little token, you either get that energy back.
Right.
You make some money. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
But even if you don't, you get a little bit of energy back, but it's not about you. It's about making a connection with people and making them escape reality, let off that steam and have an amazing time.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you force that, if it's about you, that's once again, straying from you not being authentic and you're not going to have much success. People are going to see through that.
Yeah. And as you're going through this, I mean, I've always wanted to ask you this, you know, it's like, I know that you went into photography. And I never knew that you, I mean, look, you've had other past lives as well. You were in the military
mm-hmm.
and your mentality is, you know, it's like, you've seen things, you've been part of some shit that could be pretty hardcore, but, and that has helped you, but you also got lost in an industry but you were found at the same time, Cato, like, you know, when I saw that you were doing the photography stuff, I'm thinking this is so freaking cool. This is amazing. This is another layer of this beautiful soul. But why did you stop DJing?
Well, first of all, like when you do, so I work in baseball and there's just too many damn games. Like when you,
I mean, we got to talk about how you even got involved in that though.
Yeah. I mean, that was, so sports photography happened through getting sober first.
Right.
Picking up a camera, realizing I had always taken iPhone pictures. Like even when the iPhone came out, even back in our day, I remember always having like a point and shoot camera. Like I always had some kind of camera, even when I was DJing.
Yeah, you did.
Because I realized as a DJ, oh, cool. It'd be, you know, like if I'm in the DJ booth, we have a good crowd. Mm-hmm. That'd be a valuable picture, right? So I always knew the importance of photography as one of the tentpole elements to build a brand. And I still, to this day, believe like it's, you know, your foundational element, photography, graphics, video, right? Mm-hmm. Copywriting. Those are kind of your tentpole elements to build a brand. And so anyway, photography, I was always passionate about it. When the iPhone came out, they gave you a dope, you know, camera in your pocket 24/7. And I just loved, you know, I loved taking pictures, traveling. I mean, this is from when I was a child. My mom would buy me disposable cameras and 35 millimeter film cameras. So photography was always in me as well. And when I got sober, bought a nicer camera like Costco. Mm-hmm. I was working at Power 96. We were the flagship station for the Dolphins and the mm-hmm. Florida Panthers. That's what allowed me to get my first sports credentials. Mm-hmm. But even when artists would come through, like we'd have Khaled come through the station, I'd just bring my camera, start to take behind the scenes photography of events.
Right.
And it just was, I became hooked on it. Like I'd be up at sunrise shooting down here at Biscayne, the sunrise. Mm-hmm. I'd be back after my radio shift to shoot sunset or what. I mean, I was like literally obsessed with it. Started to shoot video. And next thing you know, I had an idea. I was like, wouldn't it be cool? Cause I found another community. I found the Instagram community.
Yeah.
So I found this other group of creatives and I really needed this in my life. Cause the only community I knew was like the club kids after hours.
Right.
Scene.
Right.
So I'm like, Jesus, here's a group of people who are getting up at sunrise when I'd be going home wasted. They're getting up to shoot Miami Beach mm-hmm. and then immediately share that. And you get the instant gratification on Instagram. You get likes, you comments. Mm-hmm. That's addictive. That's a dopamine. So I transferred that kind of like addictive personality of alcohol mm-hmm. or DJing mm-hmm. into likes in Instagram.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when I found this Instagram community, I realized like, wouldn't it be cool if I could get together some Instagrammers and we go shoot over here at Marlins Park? And I started asking around, like, you know, who would a contact be with the Marlins? And it came to find out that a guy that I DJed with at Quench in Coconut Grove.
Oh, Quench. Yeah. I haven't heard that club name in a while.
Yep. So Eddie Alexander. So we went separate ways. I hadn't seen Eddie Alexander. He would do a lot of different parties around Miami and in the Grove. So we had a night together. We were friends. Come to find out, you know, 8 years separated, he got out of the DJ scene and started working for the Dolphins in a creative capacity. So he was with the Dolphins for, I think it's 6 or 7 years, and then landed the creative director job with the Marlins. So that opened the door to do an event. And I think it was 2014, 2015, mm-hmm. where we had a photo walk and we brought in local creatives and we shot a game and it was just a cool event. Like, you know, a lot of the photographers that went had never been to a baseball game before. And that's what opened the door to the relationship. So my first full-time job in sports was with the Marlins. And what kind of opened the door to that full-time job is when Jose Fernandez passed away in 2016. Mm. And Eddie called me to document that whole week of like memorial services for Jose Fernandez, who died mm-hmm. with two other guys on a boat high on cocaine and ran his boat into, we're looking at it
we're
right now. We're literally like looking at it right now, like literally right there, into Damn. The jetty. And that right there, mm-hmm. super hard for me to shoot people at their absolute worst. And I was breaking down crying half the time, like shooting his mom, his grandmother, his family, his friends coming in and, you know, coming to grips that he wasn't here anymore. But Miami got him. Like, I truly believe if he would be, you know, playing in Kansas City or somewhere, he probably wouldn't have met the kind of people that would trivialize doing coke and getting on a boat. Like, we just trivialize that in Miami. It's like smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's ultimately, I mean, it all comes full circle. Like me escaping that life, that kind of life, claiming a life,
yeah.
and me coming in to then document that gave me a new life into this industry. So adding value to why you're listening to this podcast is, you know, hard work,
right,
being true to yourself, being authentic,
right,
and trusting that you have a purpose that you can share with the rest of the world. And then knowing that it's not a direct line to that path, that sometimes getting fired from something, actually, as bad as it hurts, as much pain as it causes, mm-hmm, to have somebody tell you you're not, mm-hmm, good enough or you're not wanted there, it opens, you have to have faith that God has another path for you that's going to be better than that current one. Mm-hmm. And that's the story of my life, really. Like, that's, it's been amazing to, like I said, be, you know, live out essentially two dream jobs.
Yeah.
So far. And now I've totally changed. Like I'm an old man now.
Oh, come on.
I say I'm an old man, compared to, like, you know, what's happening in the nightlife industry. But I feel like I've never looked better. I've never been in better shape. I've never been in better spirits.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've never felt as good as I do now.
You look amazing.
Thank you.
You do.
You look amazing too.
Thank you. But no, you really do. Like, and I agree with what you're saying. Not that you weren't bad before, but I think we all had a different aura, a different thing that was going on, a different experience that, you know, I feel better now, you know, and I'm close to 50. So
what?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is insane.
Yeah. Thank God. Botox. Thank God. You know, but but it's also been, I've also been cleansing as well. And it's been challenging for me to work in this kind of industry again. I'm going in it now with awareness, mm-hmm, with more of an understanding of what to look for and what not to participate in. Mm-hmm. But Miami almost got me too. Mm-hmm. And I also had to take a break. I think that was the tug of war. And what I find more about myself with every interview I conduct. Mm-hmm. And with you, what I'm finding is that it's okay. It's okay to follow your heart. And it's okay to fail. It's okay to see yourself in the mirror and be like, fuck, I don't like that person that I'm, mm-hmm, looking at. But it's okay. You know, it's like, you've had to reinvent yourself so many times over. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to, like, in life, it all starts with you looking, being. So I read a book, it's called Can't Hurt Me, mm-hmm, by David Goggins. He's a great follower.
I love David Goggins. Yeah.
So if you listen to his audiobook, it's an awesome experience because it's like, his writer reads the book and then they do this kind of podcast like this, like kind of podcast style interview, mm-hmm, after each milestone or key chapter. That book changed my life. And you have to look yourself in this, some Goggins, mm-hmm, you know, some Goggins stuff right here, but it's like basically saying, you know, if you look yourself in the mirror and you don't like who you see, you got to fix it. Mm-hmm. And so what you're doing now, probably like in our party days, you wouldn't be able to keep the consistency. You're already on episode, you know, at while we're recording this, I mean, you're, mm-hmm, well over 20,
yeah,
and you're consistent and you're, I know you got more interviews in the bag, mm-hmm, and it's like, you're driven because you're focused and you're, you know, you tell me, I mean, yeah, would you be able to like kind of produce all this in the day?
No, I was too... granted, the seven nights a week, I was practically living out of my car. I was making a fuck ton of money, but I had a suitcase in my car because either I'd be sleeping till 1 o'clock in the afternoon, then get up and go, you know, go. And then I'd have 1 to 2 appearances a night. I mean, and that's the thing. I didn't think I was that talented. I didn't think I was that great of a broadcaster. I thought there was definitely other people that were way better than me. Why I kept on getting hired, why, you know, but I said, okay, well, I'm going along for the ride. I'm going to do this. But I always worked. And I always told people, I said, you outwork me, then you have my respect.
Yeah. And I heard you say this in another show, like you had said, like you would be proactive in trying to bring business in and
always,
like helping the sales reps
always
close a broadcast with who,
yeah,
you are.
Yeah.
That's why you were in that seat back then. And that's why you're doing this right now, is that drive. Yeah. That's a commonality, I think, with the messages that we're sending, yeah, today, is hard work. Like at the end of the day, if you want something in life, you have to visualize it and go get it. And there's never been a time in humanity that more information, more resources don't exist. Like if no matter what you want to do in life, you can get started with a phone, basically.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. Like I said, like it, there's no easy. I truly believe it's just as hard, especially if you want to be a creative or you want to get into the music industry. But the hard work, that's, you know, and I don't want to cast a net, but for what I do now, I actually hire creatives. Mm-hmm. And the younger generation, definitely there's some concern that that kind of like go-getter attitude is not as prevalent with I mean, it's just a very like on-demand, instant gratification, everything now. So that's how you can separate yourself, you know, today's age. And that's how we did it, right?
Yeah, that's how we did it. Do you ever miss DJing?
Oh, for sure. No, I had goosebumps. I got choked up just driving down. I lived on the beach before I moved to Houston. And I would DJ. I'd do a couple shifts at the Cleveland and just play like open format to fulfill that kind of need. It wasn't a lot of money. It was just me needing to play. Mm-hmm. So I miss it. And I still run. I run a lot, and I'm either listening to your podcast or I'll listen to, you know, Spotify has great programming on their on their dance stations. So yeah, I mean, I do miss it. I do miss. You know, sometimes I ask myself, like, if I'm the person who I am now, could I have kept going as a DJ? Would I, you know, like I said, like I truly think I would have continued to become more successful if I didn't have all the family situations that, and just, I don't want to blame my family situations. If I didn't let kind of the party scene get the best of me, I think I would have had even more success. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like I'm living like I've just shot like two out of last, you know, our my team has made the World Series two out of last 3 years. I've shot World Series now. I was shooting the only NBA photographer in shooting the Houston Rockets during the COVID year. And I have like, at the time we had James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and I'm the only photographer on the court. Like I've done cool things in this other life. Mm-hmm. And I've also feel like the radio show, the legacy that I left through the podcast, the Club Sessions podcast, which was extremely successful. It was always in the top 10 on iTunes.
Yeah.
It would be weird because it'd be like Tiesto, Armin van Buuren, and you kind of go down some NPR stuff, and then it'd be like Club Sessions. Like, which one does not fit in this? And, you know, later on, like artists, like I remember GTA, we were at this like radio, like forum in Atlantic City, and they're on stage and they're like, you know, who inspired you? And they're like, oh, well, Oscar G and Kato K. Like and I'm like, what? They would literally just wait. At the time, they couldn't get into the club. Yeah. So they literally would just listen to Club Sessions when it came on the weekend, Friday, Saturday night at midnight, they would tune in. And I was essentially bringing you the sounds that I was hearing in the club and sharing it on the airwaves. And a lot of younger kids who weren't able to go out and, you know, actually go in the clubs were absorbing this.
Yeah.
And, you know, inspiring them to get into this. So, you know, it is what it is. I'm super blessed. I'm extremely blessed that, you know, I am where I am now, and I'm extremely grateful for the experience I had in this industry.
Do you have equipment still at your house?
You know what? It's funny. So I have a storage unit on the beach. Uh-huh. And I have, a whole bunch of vinyl. Mm-hmm. I have the original CDJ 100s, and it's like this little effects box that came with the set. I started doing a lot of my shows in Ableton, the radio mixes.
Yeah.
And then I'd, you know, always play at a club or whatever. Right. And, you know, so I don't have any. It's just crazy with technology now. Like, you know, like everything's on Spotify, everything's, you know, on Apple Music, whatever. Right. All the music's available. But no DJ equipment, but I do have like kind of these antiques that I still have. I can't get rid of. So I have my CDJ 100s. I have tons of vinyl, all my CDs. Like I came across, I opened up one of, like I have these plastic bins with all my CDs. And I remember I see this book and it's like this CD book. It's totally destroyed. I open it. Huh. It's got like Jaeger shots, like all over the like I'd print out like a label to see, you know, I'd put, you know, any old DJ knows the struggle.
Yes.
You burn your CD. They're like, not at the time, the tracks were like 7 to 9 minutes each.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you burn them on a CD and you print out, you had to have a printer and go into ink and you print out a little and you'd put like, whatever. I'd put like Voodoo.
Yeah.
Like 10 or, you know, start at one. And the next thing, and I was on like 100 and something. Shit. And, so I saw that, you know, I saw that, destroyed CD case with like Jaeger shots and God knows what else in there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
And I like going through the tracks and I'm like, oh my God, there's bangers on here. Like
you got to save that, man. You got
to. Yeah. No, I mean, I am. Yeah. I'm taking it. I'm taking a lot of stuff back to H-Town.
H-Town. Home base.
Home base.
Staying there. You're staying there for good.
I mean, I love the organization I'm with. Part of me is almost embarrassed. Like, I feel like if somebody hears this that doesn't know about the K2K life. but, you know, I really don't want to bottle this up. You know, I think it's important that providing value. Yeah. There's going to be someone who hopefully listens to this. And if anything else I can say is that if you're in a dark place in your life, you're battling substance, meaning you go out and you tell yourself, I'm going to have a couple drinks, and you end up, you know, you go out on a Friday, you wake up Monday with no drawers on.
Yeah.
You got problems.
Yeah. The weekend warriors is what I call it.
Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, but when you wake up blackout drunk and you don't know what happened, you probably have a problem.
Probably.
That you need but there's hope and you can do it. And when you do it, there's a beautiful other side. Like I'm here to shoot the Miami Marathon. And we talked about this. It's, you have this, you know, 15,000 people over here who are up, whether it's, you know, everybody, all the marathoners, whether you run a half or a full, have a story that drove them, inspired them to want to scratch off this accomplishment, you know, running 26 miles. And over here at Space, you have people that just want to escape reality for a little bit, let off some steam.
Right.
And I used to think that was in Miami. Oh, get up and run. Oh, that's like two people and 15,000 are at Space.
Right.
That's there's 500 people at Space and there's 15,000 people over here. So who has it right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there is hope on the other side. So if you're in that nightlife culture and it's consuming you, there's hope on the other side.
Yeah.
Trust me, if anybody, I remember going to my first AA meeting and they kind of go around and they start with like, you know, who has 10 years? And you always have somebody raise their hand, 5 years, a year. And I remember being in shock. If somebody, they say, who has 30 days? And you know, a whole bunch of people raise their hand. I'm like, Jesus, I cannot, like 30 days? There's no way.
Wow.
And here I am at, you know, I don't know, 1800 days or something. So there's, you know, a whole bunch of messages baked into this, you know, this conversation with you. It's hard work, being authentic to yourself. If you have problems, addiction problems, there's light at the end of the tunnel, but you have to look yourself in the mirror and make that decision to become a better person.
Yeah. And just not get consumed. I'll end it with this, because when I had my time off from the music industry, I ended up working in outreach. Okay. So I worked with Recovery Unplugged, which is with Richie Supa, who is, you know, one of the songwriters in, very well connected to Aerosmith. So we brought music therapy, right, to the forefront, implementing it with inpatient and outpatient programs and all that stuff that we did. But I'm very well aware of that. And for me, that was my way of taking time off from the industry, because I had also realized that I was very heavily involved in being the weekend warrior. Mm-hmm. And then, I'd be straight. I would never be fucked up during the week on air, ever. Mm-hmm. Never. but I had gained, I went up to 200 pounds. I mean, there was just a variety of different things that caught up with me that compounded. Mm-hmm. And so I have to compliment you for rising up and finding that space to be like, I can't do this. I can't do this to myself. And do you have any regrets now that you look back?
Oh yeah. I mean, I regret that I let, you know, that I couldn't, not just for me, but even for my mom, I've regret that I couldn't, kind of nip the drinking and the party lifestyle in the bud earlier. But like I said, I can't be mad at the way things have turned out.
Right.
You know, I did, cause I know you're just on the Groove Cruise recently. And when you look at like the 2,000 people who make up that ship, mm-hmm. If I had to put a percent, a very small percent, I think have what would be what you call addiction problems, like some kind of substance abuse problem.
Yeah.
I look at it more as like a whole bunch of people just living their best life for an awesome 4 days. Mm-hmm. And yeah, in that environment, mm-hmm. you can go turbo because you're not driving anywhere. I mean, that's what makes it so awesome.
Yeah.
But I was one of the few percent that couldn't control it. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is just be honest with yourself. If you think that something, anything in life, and it doesn't have to be alcohol, it can be, caffeine, it could be video games, it could be porn, it could be all these other things in life that are Instagram, social media, like you know, on and on and on, the things that can pull you in, mm-hmm. and have you addicted to it. So it's important that you recognize those things, because it's going to make you a better person, and you'll be able to fulfill your purpose in life by not being sucked down mm-hmm. these paths that take you away from that.
Right. So that's the message to those that are in a space. What message do you have for those that knew you as Kate OK from back in the day, from Party 93.1? Because you know all the old, because the way I'm going to promote this for sure is I'm going to let everyone know that I have you on this show, and I'm going to promote it that way, because I'm staying authentic to it. What do you have to say to everyone that's going to be listening to this that you haven't talked to in years?
Yeah.
What do you want to say?
No, you know, and that's a great, cause that, like, even thinking about that, I get kind of emotional because, oh, if I just go through, you know, the guests you've had on the show, most of them I have a relationship with. So you kind of have your DJ fraternity that I was part of. But I mean, I don't think I ever knew, even in my peak day, you know, my peak time as a DJ, how many people that I potentially could have reached over the airwaves. So I really don't, you know, it just seems like a fantasy, really. Like, I remember I would be booked for a lot of parties that mm-hmm. would cater to like a younger demo, like barely 21, sometimes 18-year-old parties. And people would ask me to take a picture, and I'd feel like, you know, these kids' hands shaking on my back. It's like, they're like, and then I'd walk away and they'd be, oh my God, you know, I just took a picture with Kate OK. And I'm like, bruh, you know what I mean? Like, if you knew all the problems that I have, like, you're, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and now working in pro sports, I've taken that with me, that I don't, you know, any of the athletes that I work with, I don't ever look at them as like these superstar figures or hero figures, because I know they put on their pants just like everybody else, and they have all this pressure, all, you know, more money, more problems.
Right.
So to anybody who might listen to this, who actually knew who I was, I want to thank you for the support, for listening. If you caught, you know, any of the podcasts, any of the radio shows, if you ever saw me live, like, I just want to say thank you.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I felt that. All right. Well, I think that, anything else you want to add?
No, this was a great conversation though. It's great to see you. You know, you mean the world to me. You're a very, very, very special person. What you're doing is your purpose. So don't stop, keep it going. Like you know, you've always had this in you to be a genuine person, have genuine interest in this craft, in the art. You've always considered it an art. So keep going.
Thank you, Cato. That means a lot. That means a lot. This has been a great reunion. Talk about a no-nonsense, loving, cool, and authentic and true conversation. This is what the sole purpose of what my podcast is all about. Now, I want you to check out the article that I wrote on Cato K. It's in the artist profile section at mmofadj.com, where you can also join to be part of our newsletter, get the latest on what's going down in our EDM community. Also, if you are in the South Florida area, man, I highly recommend that you pass on by to Vixen's Cabaret, as they have Marcus Schultz back by popular demand. It's going down May 7th, so you might as well click the Vixen's Cabaret link on our Alliances page at mmofadj.com so you can grab more info. Also, my Mastermind of a DJ Top 20 in EDM is ready to launch. That's happening this week, along with the Mastermind of a DJ Sessions mix show, where I have my very first guest, Andy Ruiz, who is the resident DJ at Vixen's Cabaret. This guy threw it down. I can't wait to share the mix with you. Also, I'm super honored to be a very special guest on Neon Al Presents, the Open Door Sessions virtual on Zoom event. Now, we will be discussing more about mental health in our scene as well. There'll be a demo listening party and so much more. I got to give much love to my girl Elaine for putting all of this together and for working tirelessly in a scene that we both love and respect. This is happening on May 4th. I'll make sure to put the link in our bio so you can join us. Now, you better believe I'm going to reciprocate too, because I'm going to get this girl on my podcast. She is doing amazing things with Neon Al, and I got to make sure that she gets some love as well. Now, thank you so much for listening to this latest episode as we shed light into the lives of artists, DJs, producers, and key industry leaders in EDM. They do push more than buttons. It's Natalia, and I'll catch you on the next podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Mastermind of a DJ podcast with Naughty Natalia. Follow us on our social media handles at Mastermind of a DJ or log online at mmofadj.com. Get into the minds.